I guess the two most important books from Sloterdijk, in my opinion, are his book on aesthetics and then his You Must Change Your Life.
Yeah.
And I haven't gone much further with him, although I've watched a lot of interviews and just the insights, his practical insights are great. Suspicious of technology, suspicious of the state. Like he's post left in his right wing, you know, yeah, point of view. And that's where I came from too. So it just feels natural to me to be in conversation with this guy or to at least try to pick up what he's putting down. But when it comes to like literal questions of being or like subjectivity, boy, oh boy. I mean, is that the first question you're asking? Like,
yeah.
You know, you know, like Younger's On Pain, for example. We read that a couple times this year.
Yeah, I have too.
Or the Nietzschean Critique of Pain, right? Like, I'm always okay. Like, I clearly I don't feel enhanced as a being by technology. Clearly, the project of technology is something like in Heidegger. There's something beneath it.
Yeah,
its purpose is, you know, is that other thing.
Yeah.
This Gestell, yeah. And okay, so then, you know, there's people like Peter Thiel and Sloterdijk who say like, well, okay, obviously something went wrong, or obviously something, you know, Peter Thiel's still an optimist when it comes to technology in general, but I'm not
either at all.
Yeah.
I'm 100% not.
And this is not about just contradicting the narrative of progress or something.
Yeah.
Although it started that way for me, you know, I wanted to just do my part to contradict the narrative of progress. I think that happened. On some level that happened. You know, there's at least a group of cynical Zoomers who know, well, I can always 3D print a gun, you know.
Yeah.
That means something,
oh,
I guess.
Oh, definitely. It means a lot.
But is that it? Like, is that the contribution to subjectivity? Just a kind of a low cynicism about the ability for the government to kind of apprehend all the data flows or something? That may be it. That may be it. And it's like low form, like low vibration or something. But look, if you're waiting for like a big answer about what type of people are supposed to become, I'm afraid I'm not a role model. I'm afraid I'm not a good example. But being human is being in touch with this sense of verticality, like you said, like this need for the transcendent or the height psychology, as Sloterdijk would say. And so assembling sets of practices, avoiding pharmacological and technological interventions in your mind, I think. And so look, here I am. I'm a humanist at the end of the day. It's like, oh, how to remain human and then how to be deeply cynical about technology. I can talk about Baudrillard's ontology,
yeah,
but I don't know that it's mine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, Baudrillard's changes a few times through his career, but the point I'm most interested in and where I think there's a union with our project here is, you know, his own critique of Marxism is like Nietzschean, and he's not the first to be there and to do that. But like to actually understand that, like, well, this is easy. Level one is easy. To actually understand that scientism and the pursuit of the puncture of the grand narratives is itself just this low form of Christian, you know, ressentiment or whatever. Okay, good. Let's get there. Now, the technical. I think the only way to play with this stuff is to realize that it has its own. Okay, so if in Heidegger there's Gestell, well, Baudrillard says something else. And not a lot of people sign on to late Baudrillard and technology, but, you know, in general, he calls it the fatal. And he basically says, like, our subjectivity is at its kind of asymptotic limits. In fact, now we have to go over and be on the side of the object. And he sees these grand constellations and recombinations of not just the commodity, but the hyper-commodity, the virtual, and technology all together, and kind of like an explosion of Marx's fragment on the machine into like some virtual space where there's a kind of knowing or a kind of learning or a set of automatic processes which can be, if not understood, you can go into like a pact with it,
yeah,
a kind of alliance with it, like if you can't exactly say it, you can still know it. And Baudrillard tries to explore in his final years this fatal path, this kind of outside of the mind, packed with like the deadliness of systems, like in Virilio, the unintended consequences of things, but with a political and sociological dimension.
Yeah. It's almost interesting because Heidegger is, you can almost say, is an optimist.
Yes.
In his orientation, as where late Baudrillard and Ernst Jünger are much more like, well, this would actually, it's funny because that would be early Ernst Jünger.
Mm.
Late Ernst Jünger, he was very much like, no, we can still save the soul as long as we psychically disconnect ourselves from that straitjacket, then it won't get any tighter.
Yeah.
And to me, like, you're kind of an IRL in real life embodiment of the anarch, even though it's so easy to get blackpilled over this kind of stuff too.
That used to be more true. I actually used to try to be like an anarch, right? Like, once I was like, wow, I kind of am. I don't know that it's as true anymore, although there's a certain independence that I can maintain, but that's, I take that as a compliment, you know, thank you.
Yeah. I mean, no, it's really easy to sort of, it's kind of hard because, you know, there's always kind of a moment of inscription in technology, and Bruno Latour talks a lot about this, and he, you know, obviously incredibly skeptical of science, incredibly skeptical of the entire 20th century project, just as kind of as Heidegger is. You know, I would almost say it's like the 20th century is the greatest mistake if you are a humanist. I mean, it really is. So it's kind of like this thing of post-anthropocentric merging with new techne and new apparatuses. And I mean, we're already fully immersed in it. I mean, you see these kids on TikTok, like there is, I mean, the imprint this stuff has on society is obviously incredibly large. And, you know, it kind of induces in Byung-Chul Han, who people say is kind of like a modern Baudrillard type person.
Oh, yeah.
He, you know, he talks a lot about the kind of the incursion of the violence of endless positivity. Like, positivity becomes an onslaught to where, in order to sort of, almost in a Lacanian sense, like the only way that we can narcissistically affirm our existence from this point is to self-harm, which is why cutting and opioid epidemics and all these other ways that people are destroying their bodies, destroying their souls only, you know, because there's this illusory glimpse that may affirm that you're even alive.
Look, I've been lost in that hall of mirrors, especially during COVID, man. You know, I chased around this BPD girl for forever. You know, that's a fun thing, you know, and I 100%, and you know, if you haven't been in the trenches there with that, you know, you won't know.
But I've done years in those trenches, so.
And there is some kind of radical affirmation of the human on some level of that, but I don't want to romanticize it too much.
Oh, it's not romantic. It's seen as a negative.
But I get how, and you know, Tom showed me this Substack post about, you know, like becoming an idiot as like a radical praxis, and like I get this as a direction. I'll dovetail onto your point where, you know, Baudrillard calls this same problem of positivity by turns the empire of the good or the white terror of world order.
Yeah, the white terror, yeah.
You know, like, and 100%, even in 2000, you know, like 12, 13, I'm picking that up. I'm like, yes, exactly, yes, yes, yes. But it seems that like it's up to us to intuit, not ways of self-harm. So that's just it. That's the difference with Sloterdijk, right? Like, I'm not interested in refounding like a new way of being, maybe because I'm not up to it. I'm not capable of it.
Yeah.
And not because like, oh, I don't think it's, you know, interesting. But instead, fourth order simulacra, right? Like, I really did my homework with Baudrillard, and I was like, wow, I think like when I see Tom render in like almost a very realistic type of materials, like these 3D guns in this black hyperspace, and then put it up on Twitter, and I see the engagement with it, I think 3D guns and like in their actual just appearance phase, like these are fourth order simulacra, and I don't know many more, and so I think I just need to be an operator of some of the early emergent fourth order simulacra in the hope that the grand conspiracy against the white terror, you know, can succeed.
I think I placed it wrong. I was thinking that 3D printed guns would be a part of the third order of simulacra, but if you could describe the fourth order and what that entails.
Well, I think 3D guns may be part of the third, in that we understand like the mass-produced object, or at least the mass-produced object's contact with digitality. But when there's always this slipperiness in media about 3D printed guns. Like, well, do you mean the real thing itself? Do you mean the crude plastic object that is the result, right? The product.
Yeah.
And I never mean that. And I do less and less with those every day. For me, And you could see this in the media too, like when CNN gets upset and everyone's like, downloadable guns. What they care about is this blood-brain barrier, right? This fluidity with this idea that, like, well, a gun can be downloaded. You know, that it exists in this effluent space. And that's its fourth order nature. It's total virtuality. And virality for that reason. So what they're actually afraid of is like, well, shit, we have no legal encapsulation of, you know, how do we actually stop the data packets of these things, right?
Yeah.
And it's only presentation, you know, it's only...
They can only say that. They can't do anything about it.
They can only say it.
Yeah.
And then there's just a couple people like me where they can be like, well, we will hurt your body if you keep doing this. I had a little fight with the State Department in April.
Yeah, I remember that.
This is small, like almost no media attention, but the State Department was like, so the guns were back up again worldwide. Everyone could download them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Major lapse in the dimensional rip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Major lapse. Everyone's downloading 3D guns. State Department's like, what do we do? So they, you know, they just like sheepishly go to my lawyers and like, well, you know, our position is, Department of Justice's position is this. These aren't allowed to be downloaded. And we're like, okay, but, you know, show us the money. Because like we're downloading.
Yeah.
You know, like we're letting people download. And that's just it. Like there's this backroom dealing where it's like, look, we are power, therefore we're the presentation of the signs of power. This is in Baudrillard. This is that empower positivity. It's like the sign is more important than anything else. The sign is sovereign. And look, I was threatened mightily. And maybe the rest of the story doesn't matter so much. But like what they care about is not the fact that you can go make a crude little gun in your garage. They care about these fourth order things that escape encapsulation.
Yeah, we're kind of sign rich and representation poor at the moment. It's so fascinating to me because, like, on one hand, you know, we're kind of in this place where, at least from my estimate, that, you know, you have all these people and they're sort of like, you know, making these backroom deals, and in so many ways, it's so hard to place an ideology onto anything anymore. And it's similar with the way that they, you know, gesture about radical domestic terrorism being this kind of like latent right-wing problem. Like, well, show me where a right exists. Because if a left doesn't exist, then there is no reaction.
I mean,
there is no reaction to neoliberalism. It is just neoliberalism. Like there is, so...
That's right.
So the kind of... the way in which they kind of reify these 20th century narratives that of ideology really don't, I mean, I'm post left, right. I'm fully post all that shit.
Sure, like, sure.
And I assume you are as well.
I try to be, but.
But they box you in.
But we keep replaying these narratives from the 20th century.
Yeah. Do you like replaying the narratives or are you just like, fuck all of that?
If anything, like I was indicating earlier, I'm trying to go back to, you know, the 17th century or something, or the 18th century and figure out like, okay, if it was fake then, you know, and yet that was enough. I don't know. I mean, clearly like I've driven you off course. So if the main thrust of your question, if you didn't get to it yet, I'll let you get to it.
Oh, no, no. You'll keep going with that.
Look, is there a left wing? You know, the player in me, the person who repeats the narratives and the ideologies from before says, well, of course there's a left, you know, it's a terrible creeping left that doesn't know it's a left, you know, and does this mean AOC and all these people like are bringing socialism to the United States as the right wing tries to sell you? Well, no, not in the way they mean it, but like in some other way, obviously this post-Christian empire, you know, like when Peter Thiel talks about interest rates going to zero, and then, you know, there were Marxist comments at the time, like, well, then communism can happen because the capitalists will have nothing to do other than redistribute capital.
Yeah.
Well, holy shit. It feels like that's happening.
Yeah.
You know, so like these moments do seem to be coming as farcical moments, but coming nonetheless. And then it's like, well, am I right wing then? You know, I've always thought, because I came out of a discourse and that I thought there were real ideas that I was trying to pursue and engage with, okay, that I don't know. I always thought I was post-left or something, but now I just find myself like, am I the only reactionary? You know, is this like a Spenglerian attempt to just like preserve, I don't know, an Anglo-cultural artifact? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like you can just hang out and haunt yourself with these meta-narratives, which probably don't matter at all.
Yeah,
but that's what I sit in this cell that Tom and I have built together, and I rock back and forth asking myself these questions, you know, and I don't know. I don't know. Some days it's like, well, my duty is to man my post because I'm one of the last men of the West. And then other days it's like, well, actually, no, I have to find the radical alterity required, you know, to like create the difference necessary for these machines of their own to produce, you know, something that I don't even intend or can't intend.
Yeah.
And those are just like totally different places to be.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's kind of seems like that fourth unfolding of Gestell that Heidegger talks about, and that's like, do you wait and you sit back? Because in many ways, one of the things I will say that I've been really attracted to lately is this idea that of Jean-Luc Nancy and Michel Serres and the mediologist Régis Debray, who I think is a really funny story, because here's this guy, you know, kind of French post-socialist conservative mediologist guy, you know, worked in Mitterrand's government, got away, but he was fighting like side by side with, you know, AK-47, mm-hmm. with Che Guevara, mm-hmm. you know, back in the late 1960s. And one of the things that these guys have basically said that I find